And welcome back to the Discover Virginia Beach podcast, where we set out to discover, define, and do exactly what it is you're looking for in your next trip or just things you're looking to do here in the Virginia Beach area. Today, I am joined by none other than Joshua. Joshua is the media director of the esteemed Ferry Plantation House. Joshua, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Well, Joshua, I understand that you have had quite a busy season. We're coming off of Halloween, and you are none other than coordinating a whole lot of things going on at the Ferry Plantation House. But for those who might not know what it is, can you walk us through the how you first got involved with the historic Ferry Plantation and what drew you to come work at this incredible facility?
Yeah. And so I've been working at Ferry Plantation, or pretty much volunteering, for almost a decade now. The great thing about Ferry Plantation is everybody that works at there and serves there is a 100% unpaid volunteer. We are very unique that we are actually a nonprofit, Friends of Ferry Plantation, 503C, and we run the house. However, the city of Virginia Beach actually owns it. There's a great backstory about how our nonprofit saved the house from being torn down, because if you come and visit us, even though it says the name Plantation in our name, we are in a residential neighborhood and pretty much right smack in the center of Virginia Beach, only about 5 minutes away from Virginia Beach Town Center, which is pretty much the hub of the city. And so when people are driving to our location, they're like, what is up with all these houses around here? I thought I was going to a plantation. And they get to, you know, our place and they ask us what's up with all the houses. Well, the house was actually given to the city of Virginia Beach by the last owner in around 1986. And the city of Virginia Beach didn't have the facilities or, you know, funds to really do anything with it. So it sat abandoned for close to 10 years. But the last owner gave it to the city with the stipulation that it could not be torn down and that, you know, 40 acres had to actually be left for the plantation. And you see all the houses around there, like, okay, well, obviously we don't have 40 acres anymore. So what happened? The developers came in and there was really nobody to kind of dig into the agreement to see what the stipulation was. And the house was going to be torn down so that the community center could be built on its location. Our founder of our nonprofit, Belinda Nash, basically went to the city and said, hey, I found the original deed of the house given to the city of Virginia. You're actually not allowed to tear this down. And then behind closed doors, it was a little bit like, okay, oops, but what do we do with it? This house is a mess. There's actually dead animals in there. There's windows that have been busted out, a whole bunch of trash. Like, we don't really have the funds or anything set up to run this place. So Belinda Nash said, okay, well, let me start a nonprofit foundation with, you know, my friends and family. We will renovate the entire house 100% off donations, and we will run it as a museum, and pretty much we will just lease it from you. And the city of Virginia Beach said, okay, that sounds like a fair deal. And we have been a nonprofit 100% volunteer-led organization since 1996. And we lease the house from Virginia Beach every single year. So the great thing when you come to Ferry Plantation is anybody that's given you a tour, they're not there to make a paycheck. I've never been paid a single dime for hosting any special event or giving any tour there. And so that's what makes, to me, so much fun, is the people that are there want to be, because they love the house. They love the history of Ferry Plantation and everything else. My involvement happened, and we can dive more into it later on, was they were holding a special event. One of my best friends, actually, is the vice president of Ferry Plantation, Cody Green. He was running a special event there, and he asked me to come and help out. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I got no problem. I got, you know, Saturday night free. And Ferry Plantation had happened to get into an article in the Virginia Pilot. We had close to 600 to 700 people out there that night. We were lining cars all the way through the neighborhoods, all the way back to Independence Boulevard in Virginia Beach. And I was like, oh, wow, this is intense. And because of what I do for a living, I also run, you know, high level, you know, meetings and things like that. So I said, hey, let me take over as your media director. We'll sell all our tickets online pre in advance. We'll be able to block tour times. And so I kind of came on board as a little bit of a planner and coordinator. And I got involved in that. The other thing is I'm a huge history nerd. I've loved history my entire life, never made less than an A in history class. There was that, but I'm also a Virginia Beach native. I was born in Virginia Beach. So I did move away in my childhood and moved back after college, but I love being from Virginia Beach and telling the history of it. My joke is that even though Jamestown, Virginia was the first permanent English settlement in North America, right, in 1607, they landed in Virginia Beach first. That's why we have First Landing National Park. So I joke that, hey, Jamestown might be the first, but we were first. They were here first.
Yeah,
so that's absolutely kind of been my joke.
I love that claim to fame. And what a roller coaster of events. So 1996, I mean, basically the house is in shambles. Just to recap here, they were going to tear it down. And Belinda, you said, correct?
Correct.
She came in and what do you think was going through her mind when she saw this? I mean, most of the people in my real estate sector, if you see a house that's crumbling down, you stay away from it, right? But mm-hmm. She actually ran towards it. So can you tell us a little bit more? And I know Linda's not here to share this, but it seems like you work closely enough with her to kind of reimagine that story for us. Can you walk through that process of what it took for her to get in front of the city to help save the property?
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, I never had the chance to meet Belinda. She passed away, unfortunately, in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I came on to Ferry Plantation around 2018. But her son, Donovan, is actually the president of our board. And then also her daughter's been involved in Ferry Plantation throughout the years. So even though I never had the chance to meet Belinda, the people I work with were her best friends and everything. So I kind of still feel a connection to her and her love of the house and everything. So she actually lived in the neighborhood and found out about the house and kind of did some research on it and found just all this unique history of the house. For one thing, it had been lived on since the mid-1600s by the Walk family, and that's W-A-L-K-E. And they were kind of like one of the founding families of Virginia Beach, you know, kind of pretty much the early Rockefellers. They were involved in, you know, several industries. They were importers by way of Barbados, originally Scottish immigrants. So when you had all the people, you know, crossing the Atlantic, coming into the colonies and everything else, you still had gentry people moving here. So they wanted nice things like, you know, furniture, rugs, carpet, you know, spices, rum. And so the Walks pretty much, you know, supplied that chain of supplies and imports. And originally, when they owned the property, it was close to 15,000 acres, because the more family you brought over from England at that time, they were actually partitioning you more land because they were just trying to get people to come to the colonies, you know, to settle it. And so they actually owned property from the corner of Kempsville and Providence all the way to Ferry Plantation. If you're a local and you go to the corner of Kempsville and Providence right now, there's a shopping center called Fairfield Shopping Center. The reason it's called Fairfield Shopping Center is because that's where the Walk family built their first home, Fairfield Plantation. And they used the land all the way out to where Ferry Plantation stands today as farmland and culture and everything else. And eventually it said, hey, we want our own, you know, big family house. We want a manor house. They ended up building the Walk family manor. And they built that in 1751. And that house stood all the way until 1828, and unfortunately, it burned down. The bricks that they could salvage from the house were used to build the center section of Ferry Plantation, which is, you know, my background right now. So it's just the center section right here.
Okay.
Because this section right here, the East Wing, already existed. What people don't know about that section right there, that is the third Princess Anne County Courthouse. That is the first brick courthouse in all of Princess Anne County. And anybody listening might go, Princess Anne County, hold on, I thought we were in Virginia Beach. You're in both. Princess Anne County existed all the way until 1963, and then it merged with the resort area of Virginia Beach, and it became the independent city of Virginia Beach. Pretty much they decided to leave Princess Anne County, you know, the name behind, and go with Virginia Beach because of the increase in tourism. And you have the word beach in your city name, you're going to attract a lot more tourists. But for a lot of the locals and people have been there a long time, they still refer to it as Princess Anne County.
I love that you touch on that, Joshua. And for our listeners who are maybe not familiar with the Virginia Beach area, we were basically two different cities. The Oceanfront Resort being its own entity, kind of a place for people to hang out and vacation, and then Virginia Beach being where the farmers worked, where the importers worked, and like you mentioned, Joshua, where just the normal town folk kind of resided. Joshua, I really appreciate you sharing that. And so as the history has kind of evolved throughout the years, I understand, you know, more people have come on to volunteer and you got regular times for people to go and visit this house. Would you mind walking us through maybe some of the attractions that people can expect to see or be a part of when they come to take a tour?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing that we love about Ferry Plantation is the fact that we have it almost set up in different, you know, time periods. And so when you go into different areas of the house, you're kind of jumping from time period to time period. So when you come in, we actually start you in the courthouse. This section right here, the courthouse, you know, was built in 1735. Again, the original brick courthouse of the third courthouse of Princess Anne County, the first one made of brick. And so
Say that five times fast, right?
Yeah. And so we start you off in 1735, and we give you the history of the Walk family coming into Virginia Beach, founding, you know, having their original home that burned down, you know, and everything else. And then all the other families that move in and give you a history of Virginia Beach. Because as you stated, you had the resort area, but the rest of Virginia Beach was just farmland. The population of Virginia Beach didn't exceed 100,000 people until about 1910. It was very, very rural for a very long time. And so when you walk in, we give you the history of the courthouse, how it operated, because the judge actually didn't sit there the entire time. He went to different courthouses in the area in a circuit, which is why we have the term circuit court. And he would come and basically have a stack of, you know, different cases. And some of them we have are kind of, you know, hilarious. You know, there's some that said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, Sally milked Rebecca's goat and had the audacity to drink it. And so the judge is just like, And then back then you actually had to have your husband's, unfortunate ladies, you had to have your husband's permission to actually go to court and sue anybody. And if the judge found your case fruitless, he would actually whip your husband for letting you bring the court case in front of him, which didn't happen very often. That was, you know, rare. But still, the other thing that is still unique to our property is you need three things to have an active courthouse. You need to be able to house your inmates, which we actually did have a jail cell below the courthouse when the house was modernized. So it's filled in. It's brick and mortar, so it's not operational. You had to be able to feed your inmates. We have the well out front. We have a fireplace brick oven in the house, and there's actually a section where you can actually put bread in to have bread made. But you also have to be able to hand down capital punishment as well. And as morbid as it sounds, we actually still have the original courthouse hanging tree on the property. Wow. Yeah, it's a very, very large sycamore tree planted at minimum 1700, because it takes about 30 years for a sycamore to become mature enough to be a hanging tree. So it is something that we show people that it was there. But at the same time, we tell the truth. Capital punishment wasn't as common as people would think, because one, the joke is you can't tax a dead person. And we had to have as many people in this area as possible for commerce and trade and the growth. So they didn't really necessarily just want to, you know, hang somebody for an arbitrary crime unless it was something very, very offensive. Sure. But sometimes they would say, okay, let's fine you right now. And then a little bit later, we're like, hey, we didn't get enough money out of you the first time. Let's fine you again.
Yeah. Goat milk can only get you so far, right? Yeah. As far as punishment is concerned, sure.
Yep. And then we move on to the center section of the house, explaining how it was built on in 1830 from the bricks remaining from the house that burned down. And so you step forward into 1830, and we go into the family who lived at Ferry Plantation, the McIntosh family, with Charles McIntosh. He was actually a captain in the Civil War. And what's very unique to us is most locals know about the battle of, you know, the USS Monitor versus CSS Merrimack. We have a bridge here in our area called the Monitor Merrimack Bridge and Tunnel, or for short, we call it the M&M. And what's historically significant about that is that location where the bridge is was the first battle of two Ironside ships in North America or ever, and that battle happened. Now, what's funny is if you're from the North, you won. If you're from the South, you won, even though historians say it was pretty much, you know, a draw at that point. But the significance of that battle is because of the military experience Charles McIntosh had, they sent him down to New Orleans to defend, you know, the city of New Orleans from a friend of his, David Farragut. And a lot of military people will instantly chime up knowing that person because he's the person with the quote, "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." And they put him on an Ironside ship to defend the city of New Orleans. Unfortunately, he was one of three men in an exposed position and took direct cannon fire. And he lost an arm and a leg in the battle and succumbed to his injuries 13 days later. And so the significance of the Monitor-Merrimack battle led Charles to becoming the captive of an Ironside in New Orleans. So that's, you know, pretty much the story of him. The next section of the house we move into is the only section that is actually built out of timber. So this section of the house was built on in 1850, and this is the parlor area. So it's the area that people would come in and be entertained by the household. There used to be a door right here, so people, carriages would come up to the side and you would come in and you'd be entertained in here. So we step forward into about 1850 and kind of show the entertainment area of the house and everything else. And then we go into the next family that owned the house starting in 1890, and that was Charles Mitchell Barnett. He was also a Scottish immigrant by way of Edinburgh, and he moved to North America first to New York and then came south. But nobody in this area considered him a carpetbagger because, one, he was Scottish and they really liked him. He was involved in several different industries here in the area. One of the biggest industries was actually the oyster harvesting industry, which a lot of people don't know about. The Lynn Haven River in Virginia Beach was very, very well known for their oysters, even so much that Napoleon Bonaparte's nephew came to visit North America, and he said that the Lynn Haven oysters rivaled all the oysters that they have ever had in France. And I've been lucky enough to actually have been to France and to the Normandy area and had oysters there, so I can compare. And I can, hopefully I'm being non-biased, but the Lynn Haven oysters are just phenomenal in taste. And it's most of a geographic thing, because if you look where the Lynn Haven River is, you have the salt water from the Chesapeake Bay, but you have the fresh water runoff from the land. So you get that perfect mixture of fresh water and brackish water. And so it's not too salty, but not too bland. Some people don't know this, but the oysters are pretty much the exact same type and species all the way up and down the East Coast. So you're not having a different type of oyster. It just depends on the location.
Wow, that's so fascinating too, and I've actually heard that back. If we rewind a little bit, a couple hundred years, the oysters are actually much larger. Is that true?
That is very true. So actually, in the house, we have hanging up a oyster that is massive size, and everybody looks at it like that is a huge oyster, because back then oysters used to be measured in shoe size, and the one we have is about a size 5, and we tell people that's actually small. If you don't over-harvest or pollute the waters, oysters could get up to almost a dinner plate size, which we joke that's a lot of sriracha sauce and cocktail sauce. So we say that, you know, unfortunately, just over-harvesting, pollution and everything else decimated the oyster harvesting industry in our area. And actually, it's really starting to come back. There's an organization called Lynn Haven River Now that is actually working to bring back the oyster harvesting industry in the Lynn Haven River and also the surrounding rivers as well. You have the James River, you have the York River, the Rappahannock, and everything else. And they are bringing back the oyster industry very much in this area, so much that I believe last year they actually expanded the oyster harvesting season because we were doing so well. They actually let, you know, the harvest season actually go further. So that's a great thing. If you come to Virginia Beach, there's another area or a local attraction called Mount Trashmore.
Yes.
And, don't worry, anybody that's not been this area. It's not a big pile of trash, or it used to be. It used to be a landfill, and it's been turned into
it doesn't
park.
Stink, right?
Yeah. It's been turned into a very beautiful park. But what's the thing is we were harvesting so many oysters in our area. All the oysters would be sending up to Hampton, Virginia to be, you know, shucked and shipped all the way up and down the East Coast, that the mounds of oysters were the same size as like Mount Trashmore, just piles and piles of oysters. And so that's how much our industry was. And it just became decimated, you know, in that area just for over harvesting and pollution. And it's been taking a long time to bring that industry back. Oysters are also just natural filters. So, you know, people can actually just go on YouTube and see this. You have like a fish tank full of, you know, dirty, muddy water, and they have oysters in there, and they wait just a few hours. And after a few hours, the oysters have filtered it out completely. And it's just clear, you know, crystal clear water. And so that's the other thing is, you know, oysters are natural filtration systems in our ecosystem. So it's very important. And so our one of our major owners of Ferry Plantation was involved in that industry. He was also involved in the Chesapeake Coal and Coke Company. He was a president of that. And so if you go up to what is now Newport News, Virginia, we have the shipyard there. Yeah, the Huntington Shipyard, that's where we build aircraft carriers. And the thing is his industry started bringing the coal from West Virginia down to that area. And that's where they put the coal. They said, oh, okay, well, that's convenient. Let's put the shipyard next to here. And that's where we started building World War I ships. So in a way, he's the reason we actually have the shipyard right there as well, because of his company bringing coal to the area. So wow. Just all these different routes of commerce and trade is a reason for our industries here, you know, growing in Virginia Beach. And so we talk about all these things during our tour about just the significance of Virginia Beach and the families there. Because the other thing is besides giving you the history of Ferry Plantation, when you're here on the tour, we also give you the history of Virginia Beach and the surrounding area. There is no official, you know, Virginia Beach Museum in our area, which, you know, I wish there, you know, there was, because there's so much history here. You know, a lot of people that come to our area, they'll go up to, you know, Jamestown, or they'll go to, you know, Colonial Williamsburg or Yorktown. But Virginia Beach has a massive section of history that a lot of people don't know about. And so when you come for a tour of Ferry Plantation, we give you both. We give you the history of Ferry Plantation and the families, but also the history of the surrounding area and how important Virginia Beach was to, you know, the colonies, you know, growth and industries in our area.
Yeah, that's incredible. And important to point out as well, when you are looking for historical things to do in the area, I know you'd mentioned Hampton and the shipyard, just seeing how much history is wrapped up in this one property. I definitely think that's worth petitioning to the city. Go ahead and just making this the official museum of Virginia Beach. I mean, I don't see any other contenders at this point. You have the Virginia Beach, you know, Museum of Contemporary Arts, right? That mm-hmm. play a part. But nonetheless, Joshua, I want to go back a little bit, because I know you'd mentioned the parlor area, or at least the item, the structure that was built mostly of wooden planks. And I know you said they perform plays and such out there. Mm-hmm. When it comes to your role as a volunteer and all the volunteers that play a part in not only work on preserving the story of the house, but also the physical nature of the house, I bet filling permits is a monster of a task. Can you walk us through maybe a little bit of and provide some insight into what process it looks like to that the volunteers have to go through to work on the preservation of the building and also just upkeep and maintenance all together?
Oh, absolutely. So even though the city of Virginia Beach, you know, owns the home, pretty much we are responsible for any maintenance and upkeep. So we're the gardeners, we're the landscapers. We do have, you know, Virginia Beach does provide us a landscaping service that comes out and like pretty much just cuts the grass. But we have a Celtic garden out front, and then we actually have an herb garden and a vegetable garden in the back. And we pretty much, you know, keep that going as well. So pretty much everybody has their own roles and everything. So they come out usually during the spring. We do one massive spring cleaning. We get all the leaves up, you know, from the fall. We get all the, you know, vegetation and flower beds ready, you know, for the season and everything else. We have our own equipment, or bring our own equipment from home for leaf blowers and mowers and everything else. As far as permits to do any construction on the property. So the Ferry Plantation actually is a part of the National Historical Registration. So okay. We are on the United States National Historical Registration, which means we can never be torn down, which is yay. We can, you know, we fought for that. And that, I think we got on the list in 2005. Right. So we can only ever be a museum. So the house can never be torn down, which is great. But the complication with that means if you want to do any restoration or rework, it has to go through a massive approval process. And what some people might know is behind me, as you see Ferry Plantation and its red brick, this is not the original look of Ferry Plantation. Right. Originally, Ferry Plantation, the bricks were covered in white oyster stucco. If you come out, you can actually see the white oyster stucco still on our chimneys. However, a gentleman in the 1990s thought it'd be good to give, you know, Ferry Plantation a good clean, and he took a pressure washer to the house. The white oyster stucco started to come off immediately, and he just continued the process, thinking that we could add it back later, not realizing that white oyster stucco isn't something anybody really does anymore. So there's only a handful of companies that do that, and because of that, it means a lot of money has to go to it. So
I bet.
Would we ever put the white oyster stucco back on? Maybe, maybe not. You know, it's one of those we try to kind of divvy up what's important. When the house was actually turned into a museum, we actually did have a front patio and back patio, because what you might not actually understand is you're looking at the back side of the house. So sure. This is where you walk to when you come to Ferry Plantation. This is the section that faces the Lynn Haven River. So the back of the house faces the river. The front of the house faces the land. But the front of the house faces out into pretty much the residential area. So we pretty much use the back of the house for people coming in and getting into the house, and also for, you know, great looking photos like this one. And so when we're doing any restoration, everything else, you know, money is definitely sometimes a thing. So that's why any donations go straight into the house. Some of the volunteers are just great. I, you know, will just bring my own equipment and do it myself. Let's see if I can kind of move out of the way to show it. We have a brick walkway going all the way up to the house. And I pressure washed that. It took me about 4 weeks to pressure wash that entire brick path going all the way forward. And then, you know, I just have my own pressure washer, and then I filled, you know, the cracks in back with paver sand and everything else. And it's just so much I love the property. It's just, I'm not going to necessarily ask anybody to do that. But we also have people that come out and do special donations, and we'll do something or restore something. And we always have typically a major project going on, and we concentrate on that, whether it's repainting an inside section of the house, or replacing some of the not window blinds, but the shutters. The shutters are brand new, and that was actually provided by the city. We have an amazing relationship with the city, to where they will actually come out and say, okay, hey, let's fix your roof, or let's fix, you know, this or this. And so it's great. And also, we just a few years ago had to replace an entire floor section in our study because it was just rotting. And so the contractors came in and they looked at the floor, says, okay, we have to replace it. And they said, well, it's going to be really weird because we're going to be replacing it right next to the original section of the floor. And the wood that was used was called, I believe it's called heart of pine. And you can't get that anymore. Yeah. Available. And so the contractor said, oh, but we can get something close. Oh, what we can do is we can actually weather warp the wood for you to make it look older than it is instead of brand new. Oh, we'll also, you know, take a torch to the nails and make it look like the, you know, the nails were chemically burned in like the originals were. So when you come to give a tour, when you get to that section of the house, I say, hey, the newest section of the house was actually is now in this room. And I'm asking, or the newest addition is in this room. And I ask people to look for it, and they're looking for items or trinkets or something or in the room. And I point to the floor and they're like, what? And I'm like, this floor is brand new. And they're like, that looks like, you know, it's 1700 flooring. We're like, mm-mm. You know, the company that came in fell in love with the house and the history, and they actually went beyond what they needed to do, because they could have just slapped in a brand new floor and painted it and walked out the door. But they took the time to actually weather warp it and actually make it match the original floor that was a section that was still in there. And so you can't even tell.
Wow, that is incredible. I mean, just a perfect blend of history and art coming together. I mean, any historic home. I mean, you go, in downtown Hampton, where you see a lot of the Victorian style homes that have been preserved, but then to see something like this kind of outshine those, makes me proud to be part of Virginia Beach. Love Hampton, of course. But there's just so much thought that goes into a house preservation, especially one at this age. Joshua, this has been a great conversation. I know you got to get back to work soon. I have a couple more questions for you, if that's all right.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. So when it comes to the overall experience that guests should expect when they come partnering with volunteers, what type of experience should someone expect? And would you mind sharing with us maybe, and I know you've gone into great detail like you do with the tours, but maybe just kind of a snapshot of, at the physical address of the location where people can go, the basic or estimated age range that would probably be more suited for an attraction like this. And then, of course, what type of experience the guests and visitors should expect.
Yeah, absolutely. So, our location is 4136 Chadwick Lane, Virginia Beach, Virginia. We were literally only about 5 minutes from, Virginia Beach Town Center, which is a big, industry hub and restaurants and everything else. So, you can come and tour Ferry Plantation and go have an awesome lunch or dinner, right down the road. So that's great. And so as far as age range, the one thing that I love is we love kids coming. Because we can also show, we have several toys in the house of what kids, back in the 1700s used to play with, and we'll show them that. And we have several artifacts. The one thing I love about working at Ferry Plantation is we are what we call a hands-on museum. Unless there's a tag or sticker on it that says don't touch, we actually love people grabbing our artifacts because we believe that you should be able to put your hands on history. And so we love interacting with, kids that come out. I have a 2-year-old boy of my own. I actually have another one on the way in December, and I'm excited about that. But I want my boys to be able to love and understand history and not find it boring. And that's what a lot of kids today, with history, like, oh, that's just so old or that's so boring and everything else. It's like, no, look at this. You have, this toy because this is the original. You have your Legos and your Hot Wheels, but look at this. This is like the original Hot Wheel, car and Legos and everything else that they played with back then. And so I can make that transition. They can find it really cool. So we don't necessarily have an age, minimum or anything. We say, definitely, bring your kids out and we'll interact with them and show them different things and let them, hold different things and we'll interact with them. Because we also will say, okay, well, there's so many things we can add. Typically, when you come out, expect minimum to spend an hour at Ferry Plantation. That's what we schedule the tours for. But really, we leave it at your discretion. It can be a 1-hour tour or what we joke is the Gilligan Island 3-hour tour and keep you there forever because there's so much that we can talk about. And so we can go into pirates that used to, infest the Lynn Haven River. So if kids are like, oh, I want to hear about the pirates, we have several different stories about pirates in, the local area. Or if they're interested in Indians, we can teach them about the Native American, Chesapeake Indians that lived in this area, for a mass amount of time. If they're interested, in different industries, we can talk to them about that. So for kids, I would definitely say bring them out. And what's amazing is as a guide, we don't read off a script. So it's not you come to Ferry Plantation and we just have a sheet. In 1735, the courthouse was built, and then the section was built. No, we don't do that. So each guide kind of gives what they want to give for the history of Ferry Plantation. So if you come and do a tour with me and then come back, a few months later and have a tour with another guide, you're going to get a completely different tour because there's just so much there we can speak about. Now, we, of course, cover the exact same history of Ferry Plantation, everything else. But, the extra stories we add in, like I love adding in the pirate stories because I just find that fascinating. Another lady there, she is very versed in agriculture. So she gives much more details on agricultural and local farming of the area. Another gentleman is also a part of the shipyard. So he can give history of shipbuilding in the area. And so that's what's great is each tour guide kind of gives additional information in the area. So you'll never have the same tour twice. So that's what's, you know, great about, you know, coming out.
That's incredible. That is sounds, I want to go now. I just recently had a newborn, so I've been cooped up at home for the past several months, but very excited to get out and about, personally asking if I can bring a kid. And also, how's the stroller access looking, Joshua?
So it's one of those, so we are not, what is it, ADA compliant. So, sure. Disability Act. But the thing is being able to get into the house with a stroller on the bottom is actually simple. It's just a few steps and everything else, and we can assist with that. Staircases going up to the second or third floor, not really stroller or wheelchair accessible, but we do have a lot of senior citizens that will come out that are wheelchair bound, and we will assist them. I've given a tour just being outside, just right there out front, and I just point to the different sections and say, hey, you know, this is what this area is. And I'll go inside and bring out an artifact to show them or pictures or something, because they're not mobile able to get, you know, through the house, or we'll somehow find a way to assist. So, you know, I will find a way to go above and beyond to make sure that you can still enjoy the house however you come out. You know, we can speak about this later, but we also do, you know, ghost tours of the house, and there'll be people that come out in wheelchairs and they can't really walk throughout the house. So I'll sit down and just give them stories of the house and local folklore and, you know, tales. And they just, you know, even though they didn't get to physically walk through the house, they got to hear all the history and everything else. And they love that. So, again, I tell people, you know, yes, we're not ADA compliant because of just being a historical house, but please don't let that bar you from being able to come out and enjoy it, because, you know, we will figure out a way to still give you a tour to your liking. Currently, right now, we ask you to book your tours online because of all of us being volunteers, unpaid. All of us have normal jobs. I actually work for Norfolk Naval Shipyard. I'm a military contractor. Several of the ladies are retired. One lady is, she was a Spanish teacher, and she just recently switched careers. And now she's still in the school system, but it's more, I believe, in the international, like, student exchange programs. Another gentleman, he's my best friend. He works down at the oceanfront with several businesses there. So really being able to give tours is, with our own personal availability, as I stated earlier, I'm a brand new dad. So I got a 2-year-old running around. I've got a newborn here. So sometimes it's hard for me to get back there to give tours. And so we're able to set our availability online. So when you go to book, that's when you can see when we're able to give tours. And then every now and then we actually do special events. And I can go into that in a minute if you want.
Perfect. I love that. And Joshua, thank you for that explanation. And thank you for what you do. I mean, this is definitely something where, and I'm glad we were able to talk about this, because not many places offer this type of service and care that you all have. So I really appreciate you diving into that journey. Would you mind sharing with us a little bit more about the special events? And then, of course, for those of you listening, definitely once you get done finishing the episode, check out the show notes down below. We'll have links to everything Joshua and his wonderful band of volunteers have going on, as far as direct links to pay, and then, of course, the hours of availability. But yeah, Josh, let's hear about those special events.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last special event we just actually pulled off, which was a ton of fun. It was the first time we've been able to do it since COVID. We hosted a Fright Night, Friday the 13th, paranormal ghost event. And so whether you go online and whatever publication you find, you will always see that Fairy Plantation is in the top 10 for the most haunted location in the state of Virginia.
Yes. Tell us more. I saw on your website specifically, it's like no more paranormal research for the 2024 year, not because you guys don't want it, but because people have actually booked out for an entire year of paranormal research.
Exactly.
All this about?
We became a museum in 1996. We have let people come out and actually investigate Fairy Plantation for paranormal activity. We've had almost over 500 teams out there. If you go to our website and click on the paranormal section, we give you like a history of the paranormal activity at Fairy Plantation. And at the bottom is a video by a YouTuber called Omar Gosh. He has almost 5 million YouTubers. So we've had some significant people out here. We've been featured on Travel Channel's Mysteries at the Museum. We've been on the RIP files, the Oddity files, and several other, you know, shows that are on TV. So I believe the audited files, or it could be an RIP file. So to the teams, I apologize if I got which one wrong, but their show is actually on Amazon Prime, and one of them is in, I believe, the third season. We've been in negotiations for other shows to come out. Some of them, when they hear our rules, balk immediately, because you would think, hold on, you have to have rules? Yes, we have rules. One, no spirit boards. We don't allow spirit boards. You would think, you know, Ouija boards or anything like that. No, we don't allow that. Please leave those out in the parking lot. No provoking our spirits, which is what we say, like, don't, you know, come in there, be like, hey, you know, take me over, possess me, take me over. Cause we're pretty sure the spirits are like, no, I'm okay. I don't want to possess you. I don't know where you've been.
Be respectful of the spirit space, right? We don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. It's their house.
And then just not acting, you know, like, being respectful pretty much. And so when, we want to have full run of the house and be able to do whatever we want, like, well, you need to respect, you know, our house and our artifacts. The other thing is a member of the board has to be on site. We don't have to participate in your investigation. We pretty much stay off to the side. But because the city of Virginia Beach owns the house, we make sure that nothing happens there and nothing's being damaged. So we're on location for the entire night to make sure everything's okay. And we're so popular, we've been booked out already for 2024.
Wow. Yeah.
And so
an unusual amount of demand for
opened up for in paranormal investigations a month ago for 2024, and then just a flood of inquiries and everything else. And practically now we're booked up through 2024. We might have some availability become available, but again, being 100% volunteer led, it's really depending upon our availability to be there and open up the house for these investigations. And so if you go online, you'll see that Travel and Leisure Magazine has that number at number one. Reader's Digest has us at number one. USA Today has us at number one as the most haunted location in the city of Virginia. But one thing I also want to state, which catches people off guard, I am the local skeptic of the house.
And yes. Yes, let's hear more, Joshua. Let's hear more about this skepticism.
So I'm, of course, one of those I have to see it and believe in. Everybody goes, okay. So we have people that, you know, that work there that are just 100% into it. That's actually how our vice president got involved. His team came out and actually did an investigation. They fell in love with the house and he started volunteering, and he's one of my really good friends. And then he got me involved. And I've came out there multiple times. And again, I'm a skeptic.
Spent the night over there as well, correct? Not just during the day, but overnight.
Like, yeah, I spent the night there multiple times throughout the night. And like one event I can say is I spent the night, and my friend has three boys. And at that time, they were 12, like 13, you know, and everything else. And I wake up the next day, and I got mad at him. I was like, hey, you need to tell your boys not to be running out throughout the house all night, because I heard them all night and I got no sleep. And he looks at me and goes, the kids left at like 11 o'clock with the wife last night because they didn't want to sleep over here. I'm like, excuse me? I heard kids running around the house all night. And he goes, yeah, I heard them too. I was like, those weren't your kids? And he goes, nope. They left about close to midnight after you fell asleep. Okay, great.
Oh, man. What an interesting tale.
Yes. Was one. Another thing is I'll walk in, you know, I'll give a tour on like a Friday, and then I'll walk in on Saturday morning and I'll just see something like that. I didn't leave that there last night. That was not there last night. You know, just something moved. And then, you know, several other things. I've never like necessarily seen a person, but I've kind of seen things out of the corner of my eye where I'm like, what was that or who was that? Probably the biggest story I have is, and it's something we want to do again, but we actually do what we call a Christmas carol night. So during Christmas season, we would actually act out a Christmas carol throughout the entire house. We would have different sections of the house as different parts of a Christmas carol. So you start in our conference room that we turn into Scrooge and Marley's, you know, business. And then our parlor area, the room of entertainment, would be Fezziwink's party. And we'd be acting it out with volunteers, you know, and that was a lot of fun. After the event was done and I was shutting down the house, it was just me and my wife were there, or she was my girlfriend at the time. And so I'm going and turning out all the lights. And the only way to turn off the third floor light is from the second floor hallway. So I'm going out and I hit the light and I hear somebody goes, hey, turn the light on. And it was clear as day. And I was like, oh, my fault. And I turn the light back on. I'm like, hold on. And I walk back up to the third floor. Nobody's there. And then I'm like, okay, I'm just tired. I'm just hearing things. I go back downstairs. I hit the light switch again. And then I hear somebody upstairs stomp. And my, now wife downstairs, she goes, "What was that?" And I was like, "Nothing." So it's been instances like that, that I'm kind of like, okay, even as a skeptic, even I can't explain some of these things that I've seen and everything else. But what we also tell people is all of it is positive. This is a residential house. We've been able to document up to 11 spirits, which is basically we can say we can confirm that this was a past resident, which is the evidence that's been gathered. And they love the house and they're just, still there. Because, some people will come in like, "Oh, are they mean? Are they angry?" Like, no, they're past residents. And then somebody's like, "Well, I was at this, one place and they were screaming at me, 'Get out, get out.'" I'm like, "Oh, okay, where were we at?" "Oh, it was this former penitentiary." I'm like, "Oh yeah, you were at a penitentiary." Or if you're at a penitentiary or a former insane asylum, I'm pretty sure it's not a nice place. This was a residential home, with a lot of history. So it's much, much more positive. And they're just, past residents who just decided to stay around and everything.
Yeah. But and it's a house on the Lynn Haven River. I mean, what's the best spot?
I tell people, even to me as a skeptic, or if you don't believe at all, when you come out for one of our paranormal special event tours, you get a history and folklore of all of, Virginia Beach. We add so many other stories in there. And we say, hey, even if you don't believe in ghosts, who doesn't like a good ghost story? So we say it's still a lot of fun because a good portion of your tour will be with me. You get the history. The second portion will be with a paranormal investigator, and he will actually show you the evidence that's been captured throughout the years and show you equipment that is actually used by paranormal teams to capture evidence, such as, spirit boxes, audio equipment. And as somebody who's in IT for a living, I get to see this equipment and everything else. And I'm like, this is really unique. The other thing is I am also IT certified out the wazoo. I've actually been in court before to disprove somebody photoshopped a car crash to make it look worse than it was. And so we'll have paranormal teams give us their evidence. And I'm looking at, their photographs or their videos, and some of their photographs are like, all right, bug, lightning bug, it was 100 degrees humidity outside, so that's why you got mist reflection. So I can go through and like pretty much disprove them instantly. And then I'm like, your thumb. And then every now and then I'll get to a photo and I'm like, I have no way of disproving what they've captured in the photo. And we actually have some photos in the house that we show as well. And so even with my experience in IT and, photoshopping, I'm like, I got nothing to disprove what you captured here. And I find that very fun and very unique.
Absolutely. That's incredible. What an incredible story, Joshua. Thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us here. Before we head out of the conversation today, once again, everything that Joshua and his team of volunteers have going on will be in the comment section below. But Joshua, this is the segment of our show. We'd love to roll out the red carpet for you. Please share with us anything you have going on within the organization itself and anything that folks can be looking out for when they're looking to plan their next tour or visit to the Fairy Plantation House.
Oh, absolutely. So for any information or to book your tour, please go to fairyplantation.org. So it is our website to where you can find all the information on Fairy Plantation, any special events. We have the ability to electronically book your tour online for any confirmation. We also do allow walk-ins on some days. So please follow us on Facebook and Instagram because on certain days we just say, yeah, just show up, walk in. We'll put you on a tour and everything else. But again, we want to make sure you don't show up when we're not there giving a tour. So which is why we typically tell people to book online because it's just the easiest. And we know, we have a good amount of guides to be there for the amount of people that will come. We don't have any current special events being planned yet for the holiday season, just because I'm going to be spending time with my newborn when he's here in December. Others will be taking a personal vacation. The last Fright Night, Friday the 13th event was the first time we got to do it since COVID. And we sold that out in less than 6 hours. So that was very, very special. And then some people, of course, were upset. They're like, "Hey, you sold out. Are you going to do this again? Are you going to open it up?" Or like, "Well, we're going to try to do it again." They're like, "Hey, why is this the first time you've done this in COVID? We love this. Why don't you do it?" And the thing is, we say, well, for one thing, we all have personal lives. But what was a little bit difficult is my firstborn son was actually a preemie. He was a micro preemie. He was born at 24 weeks, 1 pound, 10 ounces. I spent 150 days in the hospital with my wife and him. and he's doing fantastic. Like, you would not even know now. But we tell people, hey, because of us being volunteers, we do have personal lives, and we're trying to balance that and everything else. And we do have several of the women are elderly, so it's hard for them to get around more than they used to, even though two of them that work there can run circles around me, even there in their ages. I mean, their energy is insane. And the other thing I kind of wanted is one thing is Fairy Plantation is for everyone. Over the last few years, and justifiably so in some cases, you know, plantations have, you know, been getting a very bad moniker and, you know, and the information. But the one thing I love about working at Fairy Plantation, and I wouldn't be there otherwise, is we don't hide from our history. Since we became a museum in 1996, we have not shied away from the fact that, yes, we are a plantation, and there were slaves that worked on the plantation. We actually have some artifacts that pertain to it. We do have slave tags. We show those and, you know, what the meaning behind those were. We actually talk about some of the slaves that we know that worked on the property, one of them being Henry. And anytime we've actually ever been able to discover who they are and their name, we have a memorial brick garden in the back. We actually add their name to one of the memorial bricks. And if we have any significant information, we add them their information into the tour. And all of our documentation that we ever discover is 100% open to the public. So anybody that's, you know, wants to come see our documentation or any things we have, you know, are welcome to come out. And even during our special events, such as our Fright Night, I add in two different stories into it. So one of them is Gabriel's Revolt of 1800, which also led to the Easter Uprising of 1802. Because most people only know about Nat Turner's revolt, slave revolt, but that was 1830. And so there were other revolts before that in the local area, which led to different consequences of Virginia passing laws against, you know, reading, writing, and education, which, you know, as somebody who's I very much love education, that to me, that is what was detrimental to the local area. So, you know, yes, it's difficult to talk about, but at the same time, we say, hey, let's not shy away from this. It is part of our history. So we talk about it. And so we don't want anyone coming out there thinking, oh, okay, they just sugarcoat this or they don't speak about it. It's a difficult subject to talk about, but it's one thing that we added it in. We said, we're not going to shy away from this and sugarcoat it. So we added in because it is the history, but it's also a lot of people don't even know about some of it. They don't know about the revolts of 1800 and 1802. And they don't know about some of the laws that unfortunately were passed in the state of Virginia as consequences of those revolts. So we add that in. So it is a full-on education here at, you know, Fairy Plantation and, you know, the city of Virginia Beach and everything. And that's what I love about working there. Also, our biggest story that we have is if you're a local of Virginia Beach or you've ever been down here and you're driving through Virginia Beach, you might pass a street called Witch Duck Road. And you'd be like, well, that's a really weird name for a street, Witch Duck Road. Well, what a lot of people don't know is we had our own witch trial in Virginia Beach only 12 years after Salem. So a woman named Grace Sherwood was tried and convicted for witchcraft in Virginia Beach by a witch ducking. So what that is she was placed in a body of water, which was the Limehandle River, and if she floated, it was pretty much like a second baptism. If you floated, then the water of Christ expelled you, and you're demonic, and so you had to be, you know, judged accordingly. If you sank, well, the water of Christ accepted you. You drowned, possibly, but you can be buried on church property. So Grace Sherwood was, you know, given this trial, and she actually floated. But the thing is she was a farm girl. She untied herself and swam around the boat, laughing at them. And there's a lot more that goes into the story than just this that's been passed down through the years. Our organization is actually the one that fought and got her exonerated 300 years to the day of her conviction by, at the time, Governor Tim Kaine. That was something Belinda Nash fought for. And so we had her fully exonerated. And we tell her story in there. We tell the history of the trial and area because she was wrongly persecuted and convicted. She was a widowed woman at the time. And a lot of things just kind of went into her trial that are like, wow, you were really going after this woman, you know, to really get her. And so we have our own witch trial in Virginia Beach with a lot of history of it. And we feel like it's our story to tell because we're the ones that got her exonerated. And we're the ones that have been able to kind of find a lot of the things and evidence and documentation of her trial. And So parts of it we give, hey, this is what really happened. And then other parts are like, hey, here's our personal opinion because we don't have anything to back this up. But if you look at the time period and what was going on, we feel like, you know, this is what happened. So one of the things that never happened in North America, anybody listening, is nobody was ever burned at the stake for witchcraft in North America. That was an European thing. So a lot of people don't know that. There was different ways of trying witches in North America. Burning them wasn't one of them. And also, at least in Virginia, you had to be convicted of witchcraft twice before you could actually be executed. And so when Grace was found guilty the first time, they had to have a second trial. Now, historians will say, oh, those trial documents were lost when Richmond burned during the Civil War. However, personally, we believe that second trial never happened because this would have been around, you know, 1708. And it's like nobody was really being tried for witchcraft in North America anymore. And they pretty much had stopped it almost at that point in Europe. And so she was kind of just kept in jail for several years. And then we have documentation that after 7 years of her first conviction, she got her property back and she fought to get her land and property back. So we have a personal opinion that she was kept in jail and then just finally let out because, all right, just leave us alone, go back. And she fought to get her property back, and she did. And she lived until the age of 80. But there's a lot of other historical contexts that go into it. So when you do come out for a tour of Fairy Plantation, that story is added in to our tour. And it's like our final, you know, story that we tell you and everything else. And it's just a great addition, you know, to the local tales and folklore of Virginia Beach.
I love it. And that definitely, I think, highlights your passion and enthusiasm for history, because you want to be able to not only tell all the parts of history, but you also want to be able to provide the evidence to help support or deny a decision, right? And give people that opportunity, which is really an incredible, incredible story to end with. Thank you so much again, Joshua, for all your time. If you'd like to learn more about Joshua and what he's got going on, check the link in the description below. Joshua, I got to let you get back to work, man. I know you got to do tours. I really appreciate this personalized tour. And also that last bit at the end, just fantastic. We appreciate your transparency. Go see Joshua at the Fairy Plantation House, and definitely, you know, stick around with us. We'll have another guest coming up very soon. Until then, go out, discover Virginia Beach, and we will see you all in the next episode. Talk to you then.